Today's the feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. It is the third Marian feast of this week. We've spoken about this a little bit, but it's good to look at these feasts. The big one, of course, was Tuesday, the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception, the very beginning of Mary's life, the moment, the start. Then the second feast, a little bit less significant and actually newer on the universal calendar. That was on December 10th. That was a Thursday, Feast of Our Lady of Loreto. We got a glimpse not of Mary in the womb, but Mary's earthly life, her childhood home where she lived in Nazareth, a little reflection on the Holy Family. Today's feast takes us up to the 16th century, Mary's famous apparition to St. Juan Diego in Mexico. This feast, this event of Mary's apparition in Guadalupe is, even from a historical standpoint alone, is a fascinating one. You could study it from many standpoints of cultural or historical, or even artistic, just the artistic evaluation of the image of Mary on the tilma is a fascinating one. But I said even historically, because that moment, December 1531, marks an extraordinary turning point in the history of the New World. What was previously a very tense encounter between Old World and New World, particularly between Spain and the Aztecs, or the peoples who were under Aztec domination, it was very difficult, and the missionaries were not making much progress. And all of a sudden, there was this wave of interest in the gospel. People with faith will say, well, this is because of the intervention of Mary. People who don't have faith have a very hard time explaining why all of a sudden the conquerors or the religion of the conquerors was suddenly welcomed. But this goes way, way back. Remember, the first Christians arrived in the Philippines 1521. Mary arrived in Mexico 1531. So it's very, very early in the introduction of Christianity to other lands. When we think about Mary, naturally we begin with the biblical accounts. Those Christians who limit themselves to the Bible, the evangelicals, most of the Protestant denominations, they tend to play down the significance of Mary. They don't think she's very important. Of course, she's important in Jesus' birth because she's the mother. So at Christmas time, even the Protestants will acknowledge Mary is somehow part of the story. But after that, they try to push her to the side and say, well, she's not very prominent in the Bible. So why should she be prominent in Christian life? And that argument on the surface looks a little bit convincing because Mary's very prominent in the story of Jesus' infancy, birth and infancy. And we know the Annunciation, I read just now the Visitation, we know the story of the Presentation, flying to Egypt, even when Jesus is 12, the finding in the temple, so all those are significant. But after that they say, well, Mary, what does she have to do with Jesus? They don't like to look too closely at the role of Mary in Cana, which of course she's instrumental in Jesus' very first public sign. And then what about Mary standing at the foot of the cross and receiving this special commission? That's also a challenge for the Bible Christians. But we are not as limited as they are. Our vision of things is not narrowed down to what is explicitly described in the Bible. We are the people whom God has called together, the church, and the church has been entrusted with the whole message. So we continue the journey of reflecting on how this message was given and how it is lived. And Mary is a very big part of it. That's why our celebration of the Immaculate Conception is so important. There's no explicit description of the Immaculate Conception in the Bible, but the angel did say she's full of grace. What does it mean to be full of grace? Well, we know after centuries of reflection and prayer that that means she was always free from sin. So go way back to her conception. Even before you could take an ultrasound of Mary, there she is, free from sin. You go to the Holy House, you say, well, Mary was an ordinary Jewish peasant girl, grew up in an ordinary town of Nazareth in an extraordinary way. You go to the 16th century, you see the very first selfie. They call it the selfie of the Blessed Virgin Mary. That's why people are joking now. That's why Our Lady of Guadalupe is so popular in the Philippines, because Filipinos love selfies. That's Mary's image of herself. Not that she wanted to capture an image of herself, but she wanted to give us an image of herself. Very beautiful. But between Mary's conception and her earthly life and her appearances in later times, there is a biblical description of Mary. It's in the book of Revelation. So this is after Mary's earthly life, after she was already assumed into heaven, but before many of the modern apparitions. The book of Revelation, they say, was written sometime perhaps in the 90s, so in the late first century. And there in the middle of the book of Revelation is an image of a great sign of a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. It doesn't say this is Mary. It doesn't use the name Mary. And so some biblical scholars will say it's not Mary. They'll say it's the church. It is the church. Of course it's the church. But the better scholars will say don't make too sharp a distinction between Mary and the church, because the church is most fully represented by Mary, and Mary reveals the fullness of the church. If there's any question about the identity of this woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, you just look at the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and there you see a woman clothed with the sun, or rays of the sun shining out from behind her, and what's at her feet? A little crescent moon, a little black. You can see the two horns of the crescent moon under her feet, very clearly connected to this Revelation image. The book of Revelation presents this woman in conflict with a huge red dragon. She's a warrior. She's engaged in warfare, and she's facing a very intimidating enemy. Now, I mention this because the apparition in Guadalupe took place in the midst of a very severe spiritual warfare. I know nowadays it's not politically correct to be critical of any civilization like the Aztec civilization, but the Aztec civilization did have some very deeply distorted understandings of the right way to live, and they practiced in their religion human sacrifice. In fact, thousands and thousands and thousands of human sacrifices. So whatever the greatness of the Aztec civilization, there was something deeply wicked about it. It was under the domination of evil. When the Spanish arrived and they saw what they considered to be the religion of demons, they said, this has to be overthrown. This has to be conquered. We can't let evil dominate a whole continent. And so they took it upon themselves to conquer the land. Now, that's controversial nowadays. What right does one civilization have to take over another civilization? And that is a good question. Who, What right did they have? And we know that the motivation of the Spanish was gold, glory, and God. The gold and the glory part, we can question. But service of God, that was still part of it, and they could see that these people were caught in a web of evil. So there was a battle going on. And the Spanish were not winning the battle. The Christians were not that successful at wiping out the religion of the native peoples, or even countering it. Along comes this woman clothed with the sun, and in the space of a few days, she completely wipes out the dominance of the Aztec religion. Not in a few days, I mean, she only appeared for a few days, but the image that she left of herself was so powerful that when the native people saw it, or even heard about it, they realized this woman is the right one. This mother, she's portrayed as a pregnant woman, she's portrayed as a royal figure and royal vestments according to the native culture. She spoke their own language. She was one of the native peoples. Even her features, they recognized as one of her. And she came bearing a divine son, more powerful than the sun god, more powerful than the moon god, more powerful than any of the gods of the local religions. It's good for us to reflect on this strength of Mary, this strength of this woman, especially when we're in battle with evil. Our natural tendency, a human tendency, whenever we think we have a fight, is to try to get stronger, get bigger weapons, bigger bombs, bigger muscles, or whatever. And that's why, again, the natural tendency is to look to the male figure, because men physically are stronger than women. So if you want to have a war, you want strong men to fight for you. Again, that's not politically correct either, but it's pretty obvious. Men are stronger physically than women. But anyone who knows the difference between men and women also knows that women are much stronger than men when it comes to their determination for their children. You don't fight a mother when she's protecting her children. You don't get in the way of a mother who's providing for her children. And on the spiritual level, this is revealed in the scriptures and especially by the Blessed Mother, femininity has a strength that masculinity doesn't have, because it's receptivity. Mary is strong because she welcomes the strength of God. And this is important for all of us, men and women. Real strength comes from God, not from muscles or bombs. Real strength comes from God. We would think if you're going to fight a huge red dragon, you need a big horse and a big sword. No, you need a woman who's clothed with the sun. You need a woman who has welcomed the life of God into herself so deeply, with no stain of sin, that she has divine power. She's not God. No one is confused about that. Mary's not God. But she is filled with divine power because she welcomed without any interference the presence of God into her life, into her womb. So this woman is more powerful than the huge red dragon. Mary is victorious over Satan. And we who are her children have no fear in the battle that rages. We're not in the same battle that the Mexican peoples were in 1531. Not culturally. But we are in a very severe spiritual battle, and the huge red dragon is still out to devour peoples, whole cultures. So we need Mary. And as I say, we don't have to be afraid because we have our mother with us. I love the the way that Mary speaks to Saint Juan Diego, when Juan Diego is concerned about the health of his uncle and she wants him to go to the bishop, she tells him, you know the story of Mary appearing to Juan Diego, but these lines are always very moving to me. "Listen and understand, my humblest son. There is nothing to frighten and distress you. Do not let your heart be troubled, and let nothing upset you. Is it not I, your mother, who is here? Are you not under my protection?" We think of that in the tenderest sense. So we're under the protection of a mother who cares for us. That's true, and it's very consoling. But she's also one fierce warrior of a woman, and she's not going to let her children be threatened. So both of these images are true. We turn to Our Lady Guadalupe. We ask her to protect us with her maternal, with her mantle of protection. We also ask her to fight for us and to help us gain victory over evil, the evil that is so powerful in the world.